Picture a CEO in a black turtleneck, compared to Steve Jobs, leading Germany's most celebrated tech success story. Now imagine discovering that nearly 2 billion euros, roughly the GDP of a small nation, never existed. Wirecard wasn't just another corporate scandal, it was a masterclass in deception that fooled some of the world's most sophisticated investors and auditors. What began as a scrappy payment processor for pornography websites somehow transformed into a 24 billion euro giant on Germany's prestigious DAX 30 index. The story of its unraveling reveals something unsettling. We're often so desperate for success stories that we ignore the warning signs screaming right in front of us. When Dennis Wagner walked into his job interview at Wirecard in 2003, he encountered a workplace that felt more like a surreal fever dream than a financial services company. Women dressed for stage performances wandered the halls. Colleagues casually discussed hardcore pornography during business calls. The founder, Paul Bauer, hired Wagner without discussing qualifications, offering generous pay for a job Wagner openly admitted he knew nothing about. This wasn't your typical corporate environment. It was a glimpse into the bizarre foundations upon which a European financial empire would be built. Every great con needs a legitimate-sounding solution. Wirecard found theirs in online gambling. Banks routinely blocked gambling transactions, creating headaches for casino operators. Click to Pay offered an elegant workaround. Gamblers transferred money to an innocent-looking e-wallet first, bypassing banking restrictions. Millions flowed through unquestioned. Jan Marsalek, a 24-year-old Viennese prodigy, embodied Wirecard's reckless ambition. Managing teams of 20 while habitually riding public transit without paying, a small detail hinting at deeper contempt for rules. Entertaining a London client who ran online casinos, Marsalek orchestrated extravagant nights of fine dining and VIP clubs. He openly admired Red Bull founder Dietrich Mateschitz, fascinated by how someone built a billion-dollar empire on nothing but air. That phrase would prove prophetic. Founder Bauer executed a reverse takeover of Infogenie, a nearly defunct call center operator that happened to be publicly listed. This maneuver let Wirecard go public without traditional IPO scrutiny, sneaking into an exclusive party through the kitchen entrance. By 2006, when CEO Marcus Braun declared Wirecard would join the DAX 30, employees who understood their company's murky origins barely contained their laughter. Yet Braun's audacious prediction would come true, proving that confidence sometimes matters more than substance. At the 2008 annual meeting, probing questions about Gibraltar profits and BVI operations triggered a 42% share price crash. Instead of answering concerns, Braun blamed short sellers and launched systematic intimidation. Newsletter writer Tobias Bossler and investor advocate Marcus Straub were threatened by Turkish boxers who punched walls and warned, "In Turkey, people die." Wirecard's lawyers prompted police raids, and both critics were later convicted on unrelated technicalities. The message was clear: challenge Wirecard and your life gets destroyed. By 2009, anyone with integrity was fleeing. COO Rüdiger Trautmann departed after refusing to sign off on dubious accounts. Founder Paul Bauer stormed out of a board meeting, rejecting impossible growth projections. With the adults gone, Braun promoted 29-year-old Marsalek to COO, despite zero qualifications. Desperate to replace lost business, Marsalek partnered with Jesse Wilms, a 21-year-old Canadian fraudster running subscription scams with hidden recurring charges. When Visa shut down high chargeback accounts, Marsalek spread transactions across multiple IDs and created fake transactions to mask complaint ratios, playing whack-a-mole with fraud detection systems. Wirecard's Asian expansion was industrial-scale fraud disguised as growth. Financial Times journalist Dan McCrum traveled to Bahrain seeking Ashazi services, supposedly paying Wirecard 4 million euros annually. After days searching Manama, he found empty rooms. Founder Nasreen Seruri, a local actress, claimed to remember nothing. The contract was a ghost, yet appeared in audited statements.
John Marsalak orchestrated Wirecard's largest acquisition with theatrical flair. Flying secretly to Chennai, he met Henry O'Sullivan, an extravagant Englishman who flaunted wealth in Monaco. Their scheme? O'Sullivan would purchase Hermes iTickets, an Indian travel booking chain, for 36 million euros, then flip it to Wirecard at 326 million euros, like buying a used car for 5,000 and selling it to your own company for 50,000. Despite planning to spend hundreds of millions, none visited these smart shops until a German tourism expert insisted. They found simple operations, men with ancient laptops offering money transfers and bus tickets. The deal closed at 340 million euros, and Wirecard's stock soared. Investors saw growth, insiders saw theft. By late 2015, an unlikely alliance formed. Mathematician turned analyst Matt Earle, hedge fund manager Roddy, and former social worker Frazier Paring. Their investigation consumed them, late-night Skype sessions, weekend brainstorming, and a 300-page dossier connecting Wirecard to Simon Dowson's paperwork factory, which had served as corporate secretary for 738 companies. Their February 2016 Zatara report declared Wirecard's shares worthless, accusing the company of money laundering and fraud. Over 1 billion euros evaporated from Wirecard's valuation. But Wirecard struck back viciously. Marsalak established operations at a Munich villa, engaging Vienna security specialists offering 4G IMSI catchers, backpack hacking kits, and a conspiratorial car for UK operations. Matt Earle's paranoia intensified when he spotted a black Mercedes with large men watching his house. He kept a baseball bat by his bed and discovered his alarm line mysteriously cut. Two large men from Kroll appeared at his door with threatening legal letters. He endured relentless online attacks, phishing attempts, fake subscriptions, and emails containing personal information about his family. Corporate intimidation at its most dystopian. Pav Gill, raised by a Sikh immigrant mother who fled an alcoholic husband to become a banker, joined Wirecard as its first Asia-Pacific legal counsel. He soon discovered finance head Ido Kurniwanen teaching staff to round-trip money, moving funds in circles to fabricate legitimate business. With lawyer Royston Ang, Gill investigated and reported to Munich. Despite damning evidence, executives protected Kurniwanen. Forced to resign, Gill took copies as insurance. Unemployed and suspecting surveillance, his mother eventually contacted journalists. At Singapore's Furama City Center Hotel, Gill spent 10 hours with Dan McCrum, ultimately handing over Kurniwanen's entire 2014-2018 email archive, revealing contracts without customers and forged invoices. When the FT published in January 2019, Wirecard stock dropped 25%, wiping 5 billion euros off its market value. Then came the surreal twist. German regulator BaFin investigated market manipulation, not by Wirecard, but by the journalists. Commerzbank analyst Heike Pauls dismissed the story as fake news. BaFin protected Wirecard with a 2-month short selling ban, citing its importance for the economy. McCrum faced criminal investigation based on a Wirecard investor's complaint. In June 2020, Ernst & Young demanded proof of Wirecard's 1.9 billion euros by requesting transfers from Philippine accounts. When EY contacted the banks directly, both BPI and BDO confirmed the accounts weren't real and signatures were forged. Nearly 2 billion euros, the cornerstone of Wirecard's balance sheet, had never existed. Braun called it a big misunderstanding. The board suspended Marsalak, who claimed he'd fly to Manila to find the money. Braun recorded a video positioning Wirecard as the aggrieved party, but was forced to resign the next day. By June 22, Wirecard admitted the 1.9 billion didn't exist, Marsalak disappeared, and Braun was arrested. 3 days later, Wirecard filed for insolvency. Thousands lost their jobs, shocked to learn the core business was real but unprofitable. The entire company had been a Potemkin village. Wirecard collapsed with $3.5 billion in debt. Commerzbank wrote off $175 million. Boffin's leadership resigned. Ernst & Young faced massive litigation. This wasn't a failure of information. Warning signs were everywhere. Suspicious acquisitions, phantom revenues, intimidated critics, detailed journalistic evidence. Yet regulators, auditors, and investors chose to believe the story they wanted to hear. The real scandal isn't just that Wirecard committed fraud, it's that so many with power chose to look away.